Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
And Ireland still in possession. O'Driscoll, Sexton, Donegal, Callaghan, Loughlin just won. First time, O'Driscoll scores! And that is the record. Try number 25 in the Six Nations.
Sunshine 106.8. A very good morning to you on this bank holiday Saturday morning. I'm Declan Drake, in this morning for Ken and Reggie, joined by Peter Breen for the duration of our programme this morning. You're welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. So, plenty to get through in the next couple of hours on local, national and indeed international sport as well. On the show, we'll be talking to Mark Duncan, the man who created the brand new exhibition Italia 90, Big Jack and the Irish, which is opening in the Little Museum of Dublin this weekend. Looking forward to speaking to Mark on that one. We'll also be joined just before 10 by our very own Ken Doherty, who will give us the latest news from the 2020 World Snooker Championships in Sheffield, both on and indeed off the bays as well. In GAA, around 10:25, we'll be speaking to three-time All-Ireland ladies medalist and 2019 Player of the Year Siobhan McGrath of Thomas Davis about her incredibly successful career, her time spent during lockdown and indeed the sprint that is club and county championships over the next couple of months. And as I say, Peter Breen is in studio with me this morning. He'll be joining us on FA Cup memories, etc., throughout the course of the show as well. And in football, we'll be talking to Alan Cawley. He of Cawley's Call, the new podcast about the return of domestic football last night as well. And indeed, our major moment in sport this morning for the day that's in it has to be about the FA Cup. And indeed it is. We look back at one of the great finals in the competition's history, that the 1979 final between Manchester United and Arsenal under the old Twin Towers at Wembley. A great day for the Gunners that particular afternoon, winning by 3-2. As usual, you can get in touch with the show by text on 087-1155-777. Be very keen to hear what you think are your special memories of FA Cup finals down the years. And of course, we're on Facebook at Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport1068, that's the handle, and Instagram. We've joined Instagram. Hey, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068 is that one. So whatever your chosen form of communication is on this bright Saturday, Sunday morning, we look forward to hearing from you. Now, as I say, I'm delighted to be joined in studio this morning by my good friend and colleague, Peter Breen. Good morning to you, Peter.
Good morning, Declan. How are you?
Very well, sir. What would be wrong with you in a day like that?
I know. It's funny. You know, we're talking about FA Cup final memories, and normally around the 12th of May, and I always remember it because my brother Alan's birthday, and that was usually your glued around this time with your bowl of Cocoa Pops, watching Des Lynam or Barry Davis, hanging outside the team hotel, going on the team bus. All the excitement around that and all the access really they had is the one thing that we probably don't have anymore. There is very much a divide in us and them, and I suppose that's a consequence of professional sport. But yeah, it was a magical day in the diary, wasn't it? It was one of the few events that really, between this, the Grand National, really took all eyes of Britain and Ireland right onto the TV. And look, it's going to be a different, but it's still going to be a very special game.
I don't know, Blaine O'Hara, our producer, joins us in the studio as well. Good morning to you, Blaine.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Just on the cup final, I have a little confession to make. I lived in the old days, as they would say, in two channel land. Okay, so the FA Cup final was a massive thing in sport because it was one of the few games of live football that we could actually see. And our magic moments, 79, which we'll hear after the news at 10 o'clock, was my first memory of a cup final. What was yours, Peter?
Yeah, the first one I can remember vaguely was Everton winning in 85, wasn't it? Everton beat Watford in 85 or 84.
No, that was 84.
Everton lost, yeah. But the first one I can actually vividly remember was the 86 final. As a Liverpool fan, as a burgeoning Liverpool fan, as a six-year-old, and Ian Rush, you know, with the two goals, Gary Lineker. Everyone forgets that Gary Lineker played for Everton. Yeah, and it was funny, the chase was on during the week, you know, the quiz programme. and they asked which footballer left Everton to move to Barcelona, and nobody got it right, and nobody could believe that Gary Lineker moved. But that was an outstanding Everton team, and obviously the Liverpool team in itself was extraordinary, and Craig Johnson and the little scissor celebration kick and everything like that. And I suppose we're going to be covering it later in the 1979 final, but the Irish players, when there's Irish players involved, it does trigger, irrespective really of who's involved. We won't have that today, but certainly Ireland have a huge stock in FA Cup history. It is a really significant tournament. It's something that's definitely enriched football in Ireland. And let's hope that, you know, there'll be new memories over the years to come. And look, it's going to be... what about you? Like, it's when you look back at that, I also associate it with a lot of heartache as well. Wimbledon beating Liverpool in 88.
Yes, Laurie Sanchez from the corner from Dennis Wise on the left-hand side. Many, many great memories for me. A little bit older than you guys, I go back to 1981. It was Spurs and Manchester City at the old Wembley. Went to a replay. Ricky Villa took on the whole of Manchester inside the 18-yard box and scored a wonderful goal. Keith Houchin for Coventry against Spurs in 87, a diving header in the same goal that Ricky Villa had scored in. Funnily enough, lads, not too many great memories from recent finals. For some reason or other, you know, I don't know what that is.
The last notable, I don't know about what you think, Blaine, as an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, I think maybe I am being biased, but like personally, I think the 2014 FA Cup for me, because I mean, it was a long trophy drought for Arsenal, and it had been something like 9 years since we had properly won a trophy. And I mean, I only started getting into football maybe about like I don't even think I ever remembered Arsenal winning a trophy before that. But I think just that was so, like, obviously memorable for me because it was the first trophy I had ever seen Arsenal lift up as a proper Arsenal fan, you know, proper, like, you know, following football and all that. And I'd say just biasly, that was a memory for me in recent times.
Of course, Peter, it's a competition which has been very good to Arsenal over the years and indeed in recent times to their opponents at Wembley today, Chelsea.
Exactly. Well, Arsenal have the record, don't they? 13 FA Cup wins, so their pedigree is without question. Chelsea have been very strong. Frank Lampard has had a lot of success as a player as well. Has scored in the final. It's an interesting one today, isn't it? Like, it's, if you're to look at David Luiz, factor is a concern. It'd have to be for Arsenal. He's just so unpredictable. He's so inconsistent. Kieran Tierney, though, is coming into a life of his own, and he's really going to see his capabilities next season and seasons to come. He's an outstanding left back, but you just worry, is he going to be covering a lot of the defensive issues there, because he is a very offensive minded player. Arsenal are very strong in attack. Chelsea very strong in attack. Kante's back. You know, Willian, could it be his last game? Aubameyang, could it be his last game? Mm. You know, it's there's a lot of subplots to it. You kind of feel, I liked watching Chelsea this year. I don't believe that the hype necessarily of Frank Lampard is the second coming or anything like that. You know, there's been a lot of positive talk about him, but Arteta was very highly regarded when he went to Arsenal from Man City as a reserve to Pep Guardiola, so the feeling is that he has a bright future. So you wonder, will these two be the same, similar people over the next couple of years? Will be slugging it out with Liverpool and Man City to really we can afford not to mention Man United because Ken's not here.
One issue Chelsea do seem to have, reading the papers and that this morning, Blaine, is the issue of who Lampard plays in goal this afternoon.
Yeah, no, that's true. Now that is, I know he's been kind of conflicted now on whether he's going to play Willy Caballero or is he going to play Kepa. And I don't know, it seems like he's lost an awful lot of confidence with Kepa. And I think in the last game when he had played Caballero in goal, I have a feeling now, like, Caballero always has had very good runs in the final few games of a trophy campaign. So I feel like Willie definitely will be played in goal for today.
But there's no room for sentiment now. He has to go with his gut. And he knows, even though there's been very few games over the last couple of weeks, to really assess the form. And obviously there was wasn't a 5-3 against Liverpool. So, you know, you immediately look at the goalkeeper on that, which is probably a bit unfair. But he'll know exactly who his preferred keeper is. And he's probably, by the looks of things, if he's uncertain really probably about both, he will be in the market for a new keeper.
The FA Cup, of course, starts usually at this time of the year in the qualification rounds, and I think it was this weekend last year the competition actually started, so nobody at that particular stage could have envisaged that it would take 12 months to complete the FA Cup and indeed the domestic football season in England. I think you have to give the FA credit though, don't you, for the way they've organised it, the way they've handled it, the whole thing to get the competitions finished and maintain the integrity of them.
Absolutely, and we were chatting about, you know, going back to tradition and the 3 o'clock kickoff, but obviously TV dictates a lot of these kickoff times, and half five people are kind of wondering, it's not really what we're used to. I think given the weather, it looks like it's going to be hot again in London, given all that's going on with COVID-19 and various restrictions around the city, and with Boris Johnson yesterday coming out and with further restrictions, so you just wonder about that and the impact. The fact that it's two London clubs in a London final, logistically it works. You know, you're not talking about, because there's always a temptation, no matter what we think, fans will descend somewhere. They may not get near the ground, there may be a perimeter around for people to get to, but it just happened to work out this year. Look, it's going to be different. There's no fans, you won't get that sense of colour. I don't know, to me the old Wembley just associated was far more resonant for these finals, for these days, and again something we touched on earlier is that when semi-finals are played Wembley, it does seem to dilute it as well. You know, you'd love to go back to the neutral grounds, you know, when Villa Park was there, or Hillsborough or Old Trafford or wherever those matches were going to be played. So look, tradition's out the window this year. Whether that means now that Chelsea will overcome Arsenal, Blaine, you're looking at me with killer eyes there.
I don't want it to happen.
Yeah, but it's an interest. You know, I think there's a lot of neutrals who'll be looking at it with intent, and it'll be pretty clear that it's going to be a very good final.
I think we've got Mikel Arteta in the studio with us this morning. What do you think?
He does, yeah. We'll get that photo up on our new Instagram channel.
But we're talking about traditions, lads, and one tradition that's gone, well, hopefully just for this year, is the sight of the FA Cup being presented to the winning captain in the Royal Box at Wembley. It's not going to happen this year. It's going to happen on the pitch, just like it happened at Croke Park when they were redeveloping it many years ago now. But I was just saying to you off air earlier on there, Peter, you put an energy sapping 90 minutes in at Wembley, which it always is because it's such a big pitch, and then you have the thoughts of going up the steps to collect the famous old trophy. Not going to happen this year, unfortunately.
When you're getting the winner's medal, you'll float up. Yeah. You know, it doesn't really have the same impact, but certainly, look, you know, it's kind of, as a Liverpool fan, you're looking back at the trophy triumph. I'm not trying to be a downer on it, but like when you look at £1 million being spent on a triumphalist staging and all that kind of stuff, and I know that all these companies have budgets to spend on marketing and commercial and everything like that, it's a shocking waste of money, and you know, no doubt there'll be fireworks and some, you know, an extravaganza by FA or by the sponsors today. Look, it's going to look good. It's not going to have a huge bearing on anything. You know, it's a very sentimental time, I think, for players, isn't it? Like, really, and for fans, when you're looking at how the trophy's received, you know, you're looking at, you know, more and more families being allowed to be part of the celebrations. And we see that in GA, don't we? Really, I can remember distinctly going back through the days of the Brogans and Kieran Whelans and all these people as became parents, bringing their children onto the stage. It is lovely when you can do that. But, you know, it's different times now. Will families be at the games today? Possibly not. You know, and that's another reality of it as well. So, look, it's there's a lot to look forward to today. It's a very hard one to call, isn't it? I don't want you two think, like Declan, Blaine, obviously. Blaine, I know you want to win, but where do you feel in terms of form? Who's looking the strongest?
My money's on Chelsea to win it, to be honest with you. It's a two-horse race. Of course, anything can happen in it, but I think Chelsea just are that little bit stronger in all sectors of the park, and I would expect them to win this afternoon. I know Blaine is now starting to throw things at me across the studio. He won't necessarily agree with that, but where do you think, Blaine, the game might be won and lost before we move on and discuss some domestic matters?
Well, in fairness, actually, you'd probably be quite surprised, but I also think that Chelsea will win this game too, because, like, as you said, they're just stronger in every single aspect of their team. Like, and obviously this game is a lot more important for Arsenal. I mean, they call it, you know, Arsenal's trophy, they do, because they've won it so many times. But also, like, Chelsea managed to get into the top four. They're in the Champions League, they are. This is the only way Arsenal can get to Europe. Now, I mean, I don't know whether taking a break from Europe could be beneficial for Arsenal, but like the money and also the players as well, who's going to want to stay if there is no European competition for Arsenal? Yeah. So it is quite strange whether, like personally, like I don't know whether I'd rather be in the Europa League or be in the or be, you know, have a break from it. But I mean, I do feel like Chelsea's going to win it. I hope I'm wrong, but I feel like Chelsea is going
to
win it.
And look, we're talking about the relevance and probably trying to chase past glories. The one way of doing that is giving the FA Cup winners Champions League berth. That'll immediately nip that in the bud. Why a fourth team in the league should get it ahead of an FA Cup winner with the prestige and everything that it brings is madness. So hopefully the FA may well reconsider that, because that is something that's been mooted recently.
Well, it's 5:30 this evening. The curtain doesn't quite come down in the domestic season in England like it used to do, because of course there's the playoff final midweek next week between Fulham and Brentford, another all-London affair as well. But yeah, absolutely looking forward to sitting down and looking at that cup final later on this afternoon. Football Lads is back domestically. The SSE Electricity League returned with two games yesterday. The first one was at the Ryan McBride Brandywell Stadium. Derry City were beaten 2-0 by Sligo Rovers in the first game. We'll be talking in more depth about those games later on to Alan Cawley in the second hour of the show. But Peter Breen, what a fantastic start for Sligo Rovers, having had such a poor run of it pre the COVID break.
Yeah, you just wonder now, will COVID and the lack of home fans, will that negate a lot of the home advantage, really? I suppose that was a concern in the Premier League. Didn't indicate that there was a massive shift in that, but it's a great result. Anytime you win 2-0 away to Derry, in irrespective of where they are in the table at the moment, because the league is so young this year. So yeah, it's a great result and a big result for St Pat's as well, and a very, very good game. I think the FEI deserve a lot of credit for the Watch LOI and getting all these games on, I was about to say free to air, but there is access for fans. So it's a great showcase in itself for domestic football, particularly now while the eyes of the British club followers in Ireland isn't quite, you know, going to be as vocal and as prominent over the next couple of weeks until the leagues restart. So that's one thing. It'll be interesting to see. There's some big games coming up today, and yeah, look, it's Pats look dangerous, don't they? And Dundalk, you just feel they had a tough week. Obviously, they had a very tragic passing within the club, and you wonder did that maybe take away a little bit of the energy away and a bit of fizz that they normally play with.
Well, great to see it back all the same, Blaine. I mean, I think it was the 6th of March. Was the last game, certainly I was at. I think there was a game in Sligo the following night, but I was at Bohemians and Shelburne down in Dennyville Park. That was the last time I saw live football, and can't wait to get back into a ground and watch it again.
And that's it as well, is that everyone can't wait to get back into the ground. But as Peter said, like it's amazing that we've gotten to have this Watch LOI, that all fans can still watch it, because it's been quite difficult to actually get live, you know, domestic football on TV. And now that they've provided that, it's fabulous, because it's good, fans need to be watching, you know, their team. They need to be supporting them, and if the players can feel that everyone's watching them at the moment, it obviously is a boost for them.
Absolutely, the lifeblood. And of course the Scottish Premiership season gets underway today. Rangers are away to Aberdeen from 12:30, and many Celtic fans are already, before the ball is kicked in this year's championship race, talking about the magical 10 in a row, Peter.
Yeah, no, I need to stop talking about that really, because I think Neil Lennon came out this week and is pretty clear now. You need to draw a line in the sand on that. The last thing they need to be hearing every game.
But they will.
Yeah. But that's a consequence of winning matches. So that's the primary focus now. They have a home game to kick things off. Rangers-Aberdeen will be a spicy game. Always an edge there. And Gerrard is under huge pressure. Huge pressure. They're talking Morelos is going to be leaving. He should probably go, because he can't really rely on him. No matter how good of a goal scorer he is, he just can't do it in big games against Celtic. I don't think he's scored yet, and that's a major concern. Defoe has an injury, so all of a sudden there is that bit of pressure. Celtic on the other hand have brought in a new goalkeeper from Greece. They've got still managed to keep Edouard. That's the big thing. I'm kind of keep him away from Arsenal's clutches. There's talk that he's going to go if Aubameyang moves. So look, there's a lot. Celtic are certainly the strongest team by a country mile, really. But just about retaining them.
Is the Lee Griffiths situation a cause of concern, do you think?
Look, he so just to fill in listeners, he he was omitted from the touring squad to France to play pre-season matches because of his weight coming back out of COVID. So Neil Lennon was pretty critical because he'd stuck by him as well, you know, and because he had his own difficulties and missed a lot of matches last season and came back in really in form. So he just needs to grow up. He needs to decide, does he want to be a top-class striker for club and country, or does he just, you know, going to go down through the grades and just not fulfil his potential? So he's an outstanding player when he's fit. I don't think it'll cause much concern. I think they'll whip him into shape, they'll either keep him or they'll give him a kick up the backside he's got.
Just having a look at golf, lads, Shane Lowry will have some esteemed company on day 3 of the St Jude Invitational. He goes into the weekend the best of the Irish and 3 under par, and will play alongside Phil Mickelson and Dustin Johnson. Graham McDowell tees off from 2 under alongside Jordan Spieth and Kevin Steelman. And after shooting a 66 yesterday, Rory McIlroy tees off from 1 under par in that particular tournament. So the best of luck to the Irish in that particular event. And you mentioned earlier, Peter, about fans and the news from the British government yesterday. Boris Johnson stating no return of fans this week indeed. And of course, one of the events that will be immediately affected by that is the Crucible, where the World Snooker Championships are about to begin. We'll be talking to Ken Doherty a little bit later on about that as well. But that's disappointing, but just symptomatic that we're still in the clutches of this dreadful disease, Blaine.
Yeah, we can't. We can't risk it. That's the thing. Is we can't risk it. I mean, if we go in too early with allowing fans to attend games, it's just it could honestly bring us back into having absolutely no sport at all. And that's the problem with it and all. And I know with them trying out these new pilot events and all that, and they're seeing whether, you know, we can even have spectators of football and rugby and all you know, the big spectator games. I personally think it is too early. And even trying out these pilot spectator events, I didn't agree with it.
We tend to agree with you largely. But Peter, I watched the IFA Cup final last night at Glentoran and Ballymena from Windsor Park. I think it was 200 people, or was it 400, not quite sure, allowed into it. But it made such a difference, even though the numbers were small. It was fantastic to hear live voices back at a football game
again. It did, and as a stadium, the new Windsor Park really lends itself to these kind of matches as well. It was a really good game, and the place looked great. You're right, it's always better to have people there, just as visuals, particularly for such a marquee game, you know, in the domestic football calendar. Yeah, but what cost, you know? And it's, you know, really, how do you choose those 200 people? What are we talking about? You know, is it you choose the sponsors, you choose the family, you choose season ticket holders? They'll all feel like they should be there. So that's a headache in itself for clubs. 200 people doesn't make a massive dent in terms of coffers either. So whether it's the visual side of it or whether it's just that confidence that we can host and people can be responsible and we can distance. But yeah, look, it's. I don't think, I think it's something that's very softly should be the approach for the next while.
And a really punishing schedule for the players as well. They played the semi-finals on Monday, both went the distance, extra time and penalties. Last night went to extra time as well. And Robbie McDade popped up with the winner for the Glens in that one. So well done to them on their IFA Cup success last night. Other sport, lads, one that you're particularly interested in, Peter, of course, is cricket.
Yeah.
Ireland have been taking on England this week. They took them on earlier in the week in the first of the one-day internationals. Defeat for the Irish, but an early opportunity to perhaps get some revenge.
Yeah, so it's a three-match series, which is unusual. Whenever Ireland manage to play England, they tend to be one-off games. So this is the second match is on today. It starts at 2 p.m. down in Hampshire. Ireland have a couple of injury concerns. Barry McCarthy picked up an injury in his first over. So he's out with a knee strain. Boyd Rankin hurt his back again. So Peter Chase from Malahide and George Dockrell from Leinster Cricket Clubs have been brought back into the lineup. It looks like William Porterfield, who was probably rotated, would be the better word, the other day. I don't think it was a bet that paid off. But he should come back into the lineup because he needs to strengthen up the batting. But on a positive, Andy McBrien chipped in with 40. Andy McBrien has been around the Ireland team for a long period. He's a really talented spinner, very good fielder, and showed his capability with the bat. But the story of the day from an Irish perspective was Curtis Camper, who scored 59 not out. He's South African born. His heritage is Ireland. He's got an Irish passport and was very, 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 very impressive in that defeat. So look, it's going to be difficult. You're playing the world champions in their backyard. It's going to be around 30 degrees in Hampshire again. very, very hot, but great experience for what is a very young Irish team, and hopefully they'll go well today and on Tuesday as well.
And of course, playing Owen Morgan, leading the charge for the English, as he has done for the last number of years since he turned.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. Right, you're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8. Declan Drake here sitting in for Ken and Reggie this morning in the company of Blaine O'Hara for the papers. Thank you indeed for joining us, Blaine, and Peter Breen, who will be staying with us for the duration of the show as well. We're going to take a commercial break now, but when we come back, we're going to be having a look at this fascinating new exhibition, Italia 90, in the company of Mark Duncan. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Declan Drake here sitting in for Ken and Reggie this morning in the company of Peter Breen as well. Keep your texts coming in. We'll get to them as soon as we can on your great FA Cup memories, particularly 087-1155-777. Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport. Twitter account is at Sport1068. And new is Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Are you a Portsmouth fan? Are you a Wigan fan? Perhaps indeed you follow some of the bigger clubs. You can let us know what your own special memories of cup final victories were. Now we're going to stay with football, and of course, as we have been recalling over the last number of weeks, particularly with the sad passing of the legendary Jack Charlton, Italia 90 celebrated its 30th anniversary, and an excellent exhibition has started up. The Little Museum of Dublin on Stephen's Green are launching their exhibition about Italia 90 and the legacy of Jack Charlton. It's called Italia 90, Big Jack and the Irish, and I'm delighted now to be joined on the phone by the curator, who is Mark Duncan. A very good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Declan. Lovely to be with you.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us on this bank holiday Saturday morning as well. How are things with your good self?
Going very well. Hopefully the weather holds up here for the weekend and we get to go outside a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And if not, of course, you can now go to the Little Museum of Dublin.
Exactly. We're looking forward to a visit to it myself, I have to say. What can visitors expect, Mark?
I think... what we're hoping to do with an exhibition like this is, obviously you're looking at the team, you're looking at the impact of the team, of the performance of the team, but an event like Italia 90 stands out because it has an impact far beyond sport. It's one of those kind of events which I suppose is kind of transcendent. You know, it impacts upon everybody's life in some way, shape or form, which is not to say we're going to make large claims for Italia 90. I think a lot was written in its wake, you know, that Italia 90 perhaps kick-started the Celtic Tiger, that it was a moment of utter transformation. It was none of those things, but it was an absolutely blissful break from what was in many ways and for many people a very kind of grim time in Ireland at that point. It captures an Ireland, and we're hoping that people who come to the exhibition will kind of appreciate this when they go away. It kind of captures Ireland on the cusp of an era of absolutely profound social and economic change.
And is there an interactive part to it? Or
there is. I actually haven't been in since it's been set up, owing to COVID and distance and all of that sort of stuff. So I have actually... a lot of this work has been done by a brilliant designer, Mark Curry, who's put everything together. Everything we gave him, he's put up on the walls. But I believe the Little Museum always introduce a few little kind of very, very clever kind of gimmicks, you know, which have an interactive element for people. So I'm certain there is something like that in there.
And of course, at a time when staycationing is the buzzword at the moment around Irish tourism, and that it's an excellent extra facility for people to take in on a visit to the capital as well, and indeed residents of the city too.
Absolutely. The plan for this exhibition, you know, was when we started talking to the Little Museum, myself and my colleague Paul, I started talking to them about this exhibition. You know, that was last September, October, you know, and the idea is that we would have launched in May, in advance of the 30th anniversary. And of course, you know, the country was shut down, and that just wasn't possible. So we are now launching perhaps 3 months after we'd planned. You know, at one level you could say that is unfortunate, because you've actually missed out on all of that kind of wave of nostalgia and interest that we had, you know, when there was no actual sport going on. People were retreating into the past for a number of months. But of course, as it happens, you mentioned there in your introduction, you know, the sad passing of Big Jack. I think it was really interesting to see the response to Jack Charlton's death in Ireland, if you contrast it maybe with what you had in England. I mean, this is a towering figure in English football, you know, World Cup medal winner in 1966, part of a famed Leeds United team during the 1970s. And yet, what struck me is just the level of affection that you saw from here. You know, I think like he was well, his passing was well marked in England, but it was nothing like what you saw here. And Charlton was a person whose, I think, personality was a good fit for Ireland. His character was a good fit for an Ireland. There was a kind of straight talking, talking nature to him. There was an earthiness to him, which I think resonated with Irish people. And obviously, his arrival coincided with that kind of, you know, that great era in Irish soccer that people fondly recall, you know.
Of course, the thing about Jack was he was a working man. He never lost touch with his roots from day one, and he always remembered that M as well. Peter Breen is with us here in studio as well. Peter?
Mark, congratulations. Really looking forward to seeing this exhibition. I just wanted to ask you about Paul Rowse. He's been integral, really, for capturing that sense of social history and sports history across a number of different sports. What kind of a role would he have played in this creation?
Well, both of us kind of would have written the text for this exhibition. We've collaborated together over many years. We would have written a number of histories of the GAA together, GAA People's History, the GAA County by County book with another sports historian colleague of ours, Mike Cronin, who's based in Boston College here in Dublin. So we've been collaborating together over many years. Myself and Paul actually would have met in around the time of Italia 90 when we were both students in UCD, and we struck up a friendship then. We've struck up a partnership in terms of work over many years together. But as I said, Paul's work has been kind of seminal in kind of broadening people's awareness of Irish sports history, particularly over the last kind of 10 years. His Sport in Ireland is a kind of a landmark text, you know, for Irish sports history, you know, and goes, you know, and obviously takes the story back well before the emergence of organised sport in the 1860s, 70s and 80s, you know, of which obviously the Irish Football Association was part of, you know.
You've got great collaboration as well, Mark, from the likes of Sportsfile and various government departments and the City Council as well, all of whom have been important to the setting up of this event.
We have, and to be fair, I mean, no credit goes to myself and Paul for that. That is really the work of the Little Museum of Dublin. You know, they've carved a really kind of particular niche for them, special niche for themselves in the heart of Dublin, and they've built up all of those relationships over many years. You know, I mean, you mentioned footfall in the city. The last time I was in Dublin was a few weeks back, you know, and while there were people on the street, you couldn't in any way say this was business as normal. You know, it was very, very quiet, you know. You know, there's very few civil servants working from town. A lot of the kind of big professional firms are not in town. There are no tourists in the centre of Dublin, you know. So I think the success of this exhibition will really be reliant on Irish people who are coming into Dublin for a day trip, or Dubliners who are just spending a bit more time in a city which is much quieter and perhaps much more accessible than it has ever been before.
Okay, well, Italia 90, Big Jack and the Irish, runs in the Little Museum of Dublin on St. Stephen's Green from August the 1st, which is today, to October the 1st. Just two final quick questions, Mark. Opening times and if there's an admission fee to it as well.
I actually can't answer any of those because they're actually from the That's really the job of the Little Museum of Dublin. So can I direct you to the Little Museum of Dublin's website and all the details about opening times and fees and all that sort of stuff will be on the website.
Well, listen, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show this morning. Thank you very much, Niamh.
Not at all.
Mark Duncan there, the curator of an interesting exhibition, Italia 90, taking place at the Little Museum of Dublin on St. Stephen's Green. Opens today, runs to October the 1st. You're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with Declan Drake, with you in the company of Peter Breen till 11 a.m. And coming up after the commercial break, we'll be talking to our very own Ken Doherty from the World Snooker Championships in Sheffield. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Text us 087 11 55 77, Facebook Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter handle at Sport 106.8, and Instagram Dublin's Talking Sport 106.8. Just trying to establish contact with Ken in Sheffield at the moment, but just looking through some of your texts that have come into us so far this morning. John McGuire from Drimna: morning lads, loving the show. Great FA Cup memories. As a Hammers fan, can't look beyond 1980 when we beat the Gunners, as he says here himself, at Wembley. Yeah, Trevor Brooking, I think, was it, score the winner in that particular final, a headed goal for West Ham. So happy memories for you indeed. And plenty of Arsenal fans on talking about 1979 as well. We'll be looking at that in a bit more depth just after the 10 o'clock news. That tremendous comeback victory against United in 1979. And Liverpool fans, yeah, Sean in Ashburn is talking about 86 and 89 as special cup winning years, particularly 89, because of course it took place just a month or 6 weeks or so after the Hillsborough disaster. So yeah, understandably special memories there for Liverpool fans in that all Merseyside derby. We'll keep them coming to us on the programme this morning. We really appreciate you taking the time out to contact us. Now, we're still trying to establish contact with Ken in Sheffield, but we can talk to Peter Breen, who is here with us in studio this morning.
Yeah, it was. I've dipped in and out actually a bit of the snooker. Obviously, when you're looking at the various situation and COVID and everything that's going on, you tend to be dipping out and seeing lots of what's going on in different sports just to see how they're relating. And obviously, there were fans there yesterday, and it was nice to see that. And but it's just, isn't it? It's very hard, I think, once they've been given something and given access and then to withdraw. That causes a lot of complications, doesn't it? Particularly for people who probably bought tickets and that kind of thing. So you're really talking straight into refunds.
Okay, the Irish, you know, Ken had won his first qualifying game, but he lost 6-3 to Mark King last Sunday. And unfortunately, Fergal O'Brien, Dublin's other superstar of snooker, lost out as well to Liang Wenbo. 10-9, sounds like an epic clash there, and unfortunate for Fergal not to make the tournament proper as well.
Yeah, it was that's pretty heartbreaking for him to lose, and it just goes to show like the quality of competition that seems to be in snooker. I'd love to hear Ken's thoughts on it as well, because it just seems to be absolutely relentless at the moment. And I know Ken missed out last week, but in a cruel way, these kind of knockout games, you're straight into really cup snooker as well. You know, there's absolutely no scope for dilly dallying or being slightly off your game. And yeah, isn't it a funny one? Like, we spoke to Ken about how the impact of not having crowds, because it's so silent anyway, but that hush, that intake of breath when fans are there, snooker really lends itself, and the atmosphere is so important to it.
Yeah, indeed it is. And that statement from Boris Johnson yesterday, ensuring that there will be no fans at it as well. Would you be the type of person now that would, if you had the time available, sit down for the next couple of weeks and watch nearly every match in the tournament from start to finish?
No, I dip in and out, obviously cheering on Ken, and it's great that they've got Steve Davis, they've got proper legends on as well. Mm-hmm. It's lovely, they're the people. When snooker was in its pomp, when Big Break was on and it was on Saturday evening slot, and when there was such engagement and there was far more snooker halls and everything like that, you know, society has moved on, and you know, again, it's something that we touched on a while back with Ken, and that snooker is losing, it's lost probably a lot of its soul with so many snooker halls moving on and discontinuing or whatever else, or amalgamating with other sports clubs, and but there's a thriving scene there. Ireland always seemed to be in the mix. Dennis Taylor, going back, was probably an earliest memory. Alex Higgins, Ken himself, obviously, and Fergal O'Brien. And it's great to think that. Well, it'd be lovely to see, with so much publicity and so much coverage of across Eurosport on UTV and now on BBC as well, hopefully that will increase a renaissance maybe in the sport, because that's very important. It's one of these that, because it's so passive, you can dip in and out quite easily, but it's always gripping. There's always high skill and high drama as well.
Just seeing here that although he was unfortunate to lose 10-9 in that qualifying round, Fergal O'Brien, reaching the fourth round means he may have secured his tour card for next season.
And that's a positive. It must be a massive relief. And snooker, the individual nature of the sport, snooker, tennis, it's very difficult, isn't it? They're under so much pressure. They're generally travelling and competing on their own. It's not always world championships they're competing in. They could be anywhere in the world. And having to perform at the peak of your powers, particularly when you're playing for your career, you're playing for your livelihood as well. We always think about the top end of sport, but there is it's a huge amount of pressure, isn't it, for people who are trying to make sure that they have enough to sustain them for the next year, and then hopefully and kick on beyond that as well.
You talked about Pat Black there and the good old days of snooker that we all grew up with in the city, but one man who would have been present in some shape or form at the tournament this year would have been Willie Thorne, who unfortunately passed away recently as well. He was one of the great characters of the Bays.
He really was, and snooker seemed to lend itself for that. You know, we were lucky that John Virgo and Dennis Taylor were in here earlier this year. Two nicer people you couldn't want to meet. And when you think back in their days, millions of people used to tune in every Saturday to watch it. You know, snooker was, it was like, you know, golf has nearly overtaken it now in terms of everyone's favourite pastime, you know, outside of what your favourite, whether it was Gaelic or rugby or football or whatever your passions were. But snooker was thriving. I remember being a member, I was lucky to be a member of ALSA in the airport. And so you couldn't get on the table, you know, when you wanted to get up and play. It was just, and it was because it was everywhere as well. It did get great coverage. There were great personalities. There was so much going for it. So it seems to be getting more. You know, I'm not a snooker aficionado by any stretch of the imagination, but I do remember the jolt that Ken's success would have given the country back in 1997, the regard in which Ken is still recalled going back to whenever he's competing, and the fact that the eyes of the country and the ears of the country are listening in to see how Ken gets on over recent weeks. So that just shows the affection and the esteem that people have for it as a sport. And look, let's hope that it can hopefully inspire a new generation of Irish snooker players. And let's see how it goes over the years to come.
Yes, indeed. Well, as Barry Hearn says, the show must go on after the government restriction wrecked the plans to have fans back at the World Snooker Championships. We had hoped to have Ken on this morning, but having technical difficulties trying to get through to him in Sheffield. Spectators were also due to watch county cricket in the UK this weekend. 4,000 racegoers were expected at Goodwood today as well. And the restrictions on fans will be enforced at least until August the 15th. So another 2 weeks or so at least before we can see any people back at sporting events in the UK.
I have to say, I don't know if you saw, there's a set two between Judd Trump and Anthony Hamilton. Anthony Hamilton withdrew on medical grounds. So having qualified, he then decided on the eve of the tournament to withdraw. And that's created consternation. Now, it's entirely his decision because he's got underlying health issues, so he couldn't compete. And that's perfectly fine. But people are saying, like, why would you have pulled out and enabled somebody else from the qualifying period to come through? It seems from the outset as extraordinary selfishness. I do get that he would have probably felt different pressures. He probably, you know, you can't wrestle with that kind of health issue or anything like that. But I could understand Judd Trump's frustration. That does cause a lot of problems, and again, people's livelihoods have been affected.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, the very best of luck to everyone taking part in that particular competition as well. You're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8. Just a little word about what's coming up in the second half of the show. Just after 10 o'clock, we have our major moment in sport, the 1979 FA Cup final between Manchester United and Arsenal at Wembley. Going into depth in that, we'll be talking to three-time All-Ireland ladies football medalist medalist and multiple All-Star and Player of the Year last year, Siobhan McGrath as well, from the Thomas Davis Club in Tallaght, about her career, about lockdown, how she coped with it, and indeed the sprint that will be club and county championship over the next couple of months. And we'll also be speaking to Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call about the return of the SSE Electricity League last night, the victory for Sligo Rovers at Derry City, the draw between Dundalk and St Patrick's Athletic, and also look ahead to today's two games at Tolka Park and also at Tallaght Stadium. Shamrock Rovers there taking on Finn Harps. So all of that to come in the second half of the programme. And if you'd like to text us, please feel free to do so. 087 115 777, particularly with your FA Cup final memories. You don't have to be a supporter of the big clubs, folks. If you're Portsmouth, Wigan, or anybody like that, please do feel free to get in touch. Also, you can contact us on Facebook at Dublin's Talking Sport. Twitter is at Sport1068, and Instagram account is Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. All that to come in the second half of the programme. Briefly, Peter, any more FA Cup memories come to mind in terms of a year? In 30 seconds?
When Paul Rideout's winner against Man United, that was brilliant. I think that was 95, wasn't it? And anything with an Irish player always resonates, for obvious jingoistic reasons. But yeah, that's special.
Where did Paul Rideout start his professional football career?
Oh, I don't know. You're probably going to tell me Sligo Rovers.
No, I'm going to tell you Swindon Town.
Swindon Town.
Yeah, I would know that, wouldn't I?
Jan Eiger Fjordtoft is the only thing I know.
One of the few
Swindon
people
Town.
In the country that would have known the answer to that if it ever came up in a quiz. Thanks indeed to Peter to be staying with us for the second half of the programme as well. So coming up shortly will be the news at 10, and we'll be back then with our major moment in sport, that cup final victory for Arsenal over United back in 1979. So we look forward to your company in the second half of the show. Stay tuned. Thank you, folks. You're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8. Myself, Declan Drake, and Peter Breen. We're standing in this morning for Ken and for Reggie, and the weather is getting a little bit duller in Dublin City this morning as we look out from our windows here in our dockside studio. Hopefully your Saturday morning will brighten up with the next hour or so here of sport on the programme. And still plenty of time to get in touch with us by text or 087 115 777, and of course various social media outlets as well. Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, our Twitter account at Sport1068, and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. And a person who has texted us in is Liam from Ballinteer, and Liam says, it's great to have Dean Ryan back last week. Any racing this week? Not this week, Liam, but that segment of the programme will be back next Saturday morning. Thank you very much indeed for your text this morning, and keep them coming to us. Now we're going to turn our attention to a relatively new feature on the programme, which is our major moment in sport. And of course, the day that's in it, the FA Cup final being played this afternoon between Chelsea and Arsenal at Wembley. Our major moment in sport is a look back to one of the greatest finals in cup history. 1979, Arsenal versus Manchester United. A game that's often referred to as the 5-minute final due to the fact 3 goals were scored in that period. In the last 4 minutes of normal time, Manchester United, and probably coming back from 2-0 down to seemingly ensure the game would go to extra time, but one more sting in the tail as Arsenal struck again with only seconds remaining to make it 3-2. It's a fantastic day it was for the Gunners, one of their 13 FA Cup successes, hoping to make it 14, of course, this afternoon. But now, let's rewind to 1979 and that wonderful May day under the Twin Towers.
Sweet skills from Brady. Stapleton out on the right, trying to feed Price. Price is in here for Arsenal. Talbot on right and Sunderland on the right as well. And Arsenal are in front. This is Brady. Good skills from Brady. Two waiting in the centre for the cross. Stapleton! 2-0 to Arsenal. Stapleton scores. And Liam Brady has played a part in both the goals. Thomas almost got a flick on. Appeals for hands against Jordan. And McQueen! Gordon McQueen turned it in. United have scored with just under 4 minutes to go. McElroy's through. McElroy's through. Drama here, it's 2-2. They've scored twice in a minute. There's a minute left on the clock. Brady for Arsenal, right across. Sunderland, it's there. It's 3-2. Arsenal are back in front for Alan Sunderland. Arsenal have won the cup after one of the most dramatic last 5 minutes that Wembley has ever seen.
Oh, never forget that particular day and the legendary commentary of the great John Motson. Certainly feel Motty could still add something to football commentary and should be really behind the mic on a day such as today. But anyway, look, things move on and it's gone from a 3 o'clock to a half five and all the rest of it as well. We could talk about that for hours. But anyway, on that cup final of 1979, you heard in John's commentary there some of the names, Brady, Stapleton, amongst others as well. And from the two starting 11s that fateful May afternoon, eight players were from the island of Ireland. Three from the Republic lining out for Arsenal were Liam Brady, Frank Stapleton and David O'Leary. And you heard that Liam Brady played a pivotal role in the first two goals there. Three Northern Ireland players, Pat Jennings, Pat Rice and Sammy Nelson. Manchester United had a couple of players from the North and Jimmy Nicholls and Sammy McElroy. And indeed, the Arsenal's manager, Terry Neill, was also from the North as well. Remarkable statistic there, Peter. Eight players from the island of Ireland starting in an FA Cup final. Fast forward 30 years plus, 40 years plus nearly, and none.
Yeah, and look, it's a sign of the times, isn't it? You know, while there was eight players from the island of Ireland, there were six players from Scotland as well, which is quite a feat. There was five in the Man United team, and just very quickly, there were Arthur Alveston, Gordon McQueen, Martin Buchan, Joe Jordan, Lou McCarrie, and then Willie Young was playing for Arsenal as well. So, you know, just looking at the teams, looking at that bygone era of Irish football, it just says a lot, really, it does, about society. I suppose for Irish players, I wonder what it would have been like for them, the height of the troubles, being over there competing, doing so well, and trying to make a name for themselves. Times were different then, you know, and it was, you know, for them to make such a positive impression for Irish football. Then on the other side, for an Irish team not to qualify for a major tournament around that time was quite extraordinary. I know Northern Ireland obviously did, and España 82 and Gerry Armstrong and all that kind of stuff. They were very, very strong at that time. But for the Republic of Ireland, you just wonder, you know, probably opportunities were missed. And thankfully, we reap the benefits of something that we've already covered with Jack Charlton and that era coming through. But Owen Hand was very unlucky, wasn't he, around that time, and never really got that crack of the whip at that
time. Dodgy refereeing decision in Brussels, amongst other things. But you mentioned the Irish point there. John Devine, who played for Arsenal, he was an apprentice, and he broke into the team the following year, said in an interview sometime after that, I quote, "It was an English club, but it was pretty much an Irish team, north, south. I'm not a political man. We were all from the same island. We took on the world and we nearly got there." So, yeah, great, great, great days indeed. So many epic cup final memories, of course. That one stands out today. Any other ones that jump out straight away at you? Blaine, who's rejoined us. Blaine O'Hara, our producer.
I think, personally, like, the one that I remember, and I think it's just for the absolute goal that it was Steven Gerrard's absolute screamer in 2006, where he, I don't know, it was from about 35 yards, 40 yards. It was nearly more to halfway at the pitch. And he got his leg to it, and it just went right in, I think it was the bottom corner it was, and that then was an equaliser that brought them to penalties, and then they bet West Ham 3-1 on penalties that year. And I can remember that. It was phenomenal.
One of the biggest upsets, Peter, you mentioned it earlier on yourself, and unfortunately as a Liverpool fan, you don't need reminding of it.
It still hurts.
It was the 88 final, the crazy gang of SW19, the Dons of Wimbledon, beating Liverpool by a goal to nil with that Laurie Sanchez. And there's another connection. Laurie, of course, was a Northern Ireland international in his day as well. Can you still see that corner coming in from the left-hand side and the header by Sanchez?
This is like therapy. Still haven't got through it. Terry Phelan would have been in that Wimbledon in the mix as well, you know. It was a funny one, you know, the magic of the FA Cup, you know. Some people kind of scoff at that now, but there is something very special, and it's usually in the earlier rounds, to be fair, when somebody can come out of nowhere and clinch a win for a local club or against one of the big boys. But it's very unusual in these finals that you get heavily one-sided finals. I know last year's was, you know, the 6-0 for Man City over Watford, and you know that is quite an anomaly. It doesn't really happen. So I think today will be more of an arm wrestle. You'd imagine that with two rookie coaches, it'll be interesting to see what approach they bring. You'd love to think that they'll just go out and go hell for leather and see how it goes, and they'll capitalise on David Luiz or capitalise on whatever defensive frailties there are or goalkeeping doubts. But
there's a trophy to be won as well. You've got to be pragmatic. You've got to understand that maybe the opposition team are probably going to play a game of chess now and see actually what are they expecting from us, or where are our strengths and where do we focus on. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But it's like that Arsenal Man United game from 1979 is an extraordinary memory. It's a year before I was born, so I can't remember seeing it live, but it's, you still have people talking about it, you still have people referencing it, and for an Irish person it's incredibly proud. Again, I have no Arsenal Man United blood in me, certainly in my family no one supports those two teams, but you still feel an element of pride, and you would imagine the people of that day certainly did as well.
Text has come in here to us on 087-1155-777. It comes in from Tim Anderson in Dunleary, and Tim says, I am a proud Wigan man, was at Wembley in 2013 when we stunned the mighty Manchester City. Ben Watson's winning goal will forever live in the memory. Thanks indeed for your text, Tim. Good to see you're texting in this morning, and the best of luck with Wigan's campaign next season. I see you lost your manager during the week as well, the great Paul Cook. Best wishes to him for his future. But on that one, Blaine, that 2013 final, Wigan beating Manchester City, wouldn't be one that might be recalled too much, but it was still quite a shock.
Absolutely, it was. And I think that's what it is, because, you know, the phrase, the slogan is the magic of the FA Cup. And it's those smaller teams in the lower leagues that just you honestly can't believe like how far they can go in this campaign, because it's the magic of the FA Cup. And like I think in the last few finals that I can remember, some of the smaller teams that you wouldn't believe to get into the FA Cup, you think of Watford, Crystal Palace, Aston Villa, Hull City, in the last five seasons, and it's just been phenomenal. And I think this is like the one final that there's actually two powerhouses of this trophy, and they're playing, and you kind of can't really believe, and you kind of seem a little bit weird that there's not a lower team in the final.
Yeah, it less and less chance of it happening, which is a little bit unfortunate, but that's just the way it goes. Didn't take the United fans long to get in on this, you'd have to say. Sheila Dempsey from Swords, good morning to you, Sheila. Thank you indeed for your text. You want to mention the 1999 treble winning season. I thought we discussed all that recently, didn't we? But anyway, look, United did win the FA Cup that particular year, as well as the league and the Champions League as well. Beat Newcastle United by 2-0, which ensured, Peter, that the great Alan Shearer retired without winning a cup medal at Newcastle.
Yeah, it's that would have absolutely no bearing on my life, I have to say, whether Alan Shearer won an FA Cup medal. It's funny how some clubs seem to be identified with FA Cup without necessarily having the results to produce or to back it up. I'm thinking of a club like Spurs, and Everton are always teams really that you'd associate with good runs in the FA Cup, but it hasn't happened for them in a little while. You mentioned the Crazy Gang, and just if people are looking for something to watch and looking for a fix of sport, if you have BT Sport, there's two amazing documentaries on Notts Forest team under Brian Clough and the Crazy Gang, which cover the FA Cups. And the Notts Forest one in particular was from the 1990-1991 FA Cup final. And now that will be remembered as the game where Gazza broke his leg, having done so much to get them to the final, but Spurs still did win 2-1. But it just gives you a very good footnote and a very good sense of what football was like then, and the cult of the personalities. It was Terry Venables was leading Spurs and was such an outstanding manager. All his teams, when you think back, even the great England team in Euro 96 were brilliant to watch. And Brian Clough, and that was really the nadir of his career. Yeah. It was coming towards the end, probably finding it difficult to let go, having had such success with Notts Forest. So there is a romance to, you know, when you talk about the fairy tale and the magic of the cup, not all fairy tales end well, you know, and it's very unusual that sports people go out on their own terms with a victory, lifting a trophy and then sailing off into the sunset. Doesn't tend to happen that way. So the interesting thing again today, bringing it back to today's game, is there doesn't seem to be that sense of finality with this squad. Okay, we talked about Willian might move on, Aubameyang might move on, but really these are two young managers at the start of their careers. They're trying to reshape squads of fallen giants who haven't really reached the scale of the heights that they would have set themselves over the last 10-15 years. So it's very much the start of a new chapter as opposed to the end of another.
Michael Bailey from Talla has texted in again. He's an English person now living in Ireland. Loved the FA Cup. Used to love getting up at 8 o'clock watching the big build-up. And as a Coventry City fan, 1987 stands out as the best FA Cup final ever. Well, can't really disagree with you. That was a pretty epic one indeed. Thank you so much indeed for your texts on that particular issue this morning. You're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8. After the commercial break, we're going to be talking to three-time All-Ireland ladies football medalist Siobhan McGrath. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, Sunshine 106.8. It's just gone 22 minutes past the hour at 10 o'clock on this Saturday morning. It's Declan Drake and Peter Breen with you here until 11 o'clock on the programme. We're going to turn our attention now to Gaelic games and specifically ladies football. Last September at Croke Park, Dublin completed the magical three in a row with an All-Ireland victory played in front of over 56,000 fans against Galway at Croke Park. One of the stars of that particular performance and indeed that particular season for Dublin was Siobhan McGrath of the Thomas Davis Club on the Kiltipper Road. She capped it off by winning another All-Star Award and then the Ladies Player of the Year at the annual awards ceremony in City West last November. And delighted to be joined on the phone this morning by the very said Siobhan McGrath. Good morning, Siobhan.
Hi, Declan. How are you?
Very well. How are you?
Not too bad.
Good stuff, good stuff. Siobhan, it's been a challenging year for everybody, as we know, particularly since the start of March and the lockdown with COVID and all that kind of thing. For a person who has been so active with your football and all that, how difficult did you find that particular period?
Yeah, I don't think I was any different to anyone else. Yeah, it was definitely a difficult period, trying to motivate, especially if you're part of a team sport, I suppose, then trying to go out and motivate yourself to I suppose keep in shape and keep your diet together and everything. Yeah, like it's definitely a lot harder to do it by yourself. I suppose with both county and club, like we did try and, you know, keep in touch through Zoom and maybe do some S&C classes over Zoom and stuff, so that kind of, that helped a lot, I think, to be fair, because it just made us keep in contact and, you know what each other were doing. So that definitely helped. But yeah, no, I definitely think, I think everyone struggled. I suppose, especially when you have, you know, your working environment has changed as well. Like everything's changed. You're not really seeing your family. You're not seeing anyone. So yeah, definitely was a difficult period. And then when you're taking the one of the most important things away from you as well, like, difficult. Yeah.
And it's such an integral part of your life as well, because you're at it from January really through to September between club and county as well. Now, as we said earlier on in the programme, it's going to be a little bit of a sprint between now and hopefully the Sunday before Christmas for the county team as well, with the club championship, which started back last week, and the inter-county championship, which will be run over a two-month period this year as well, completely different to has been in previous years, where you've had long gaps between games.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's kind of, you're going from one extreme to the other, really. But I think, to be fair, I think everyone, and like even the thought of playing in winter football into county stage is kind of daunting. But I think it's the way it is this year. I think everyone's just delighted and is so happy to be back. And I think all them other obstacles are kind of down the priority. Like, you know, it's just like, let's play, let's do what we can. And I don't think anyone's going to have too much of an issue having to play the way the structure is this year. I think it's just, you know, everyone just wants it to happen, really. I suppose it's still the thought, oh God, what happens if it gets worse in the winter and it gets pulled? And I think it's just, let's hopefully we'll actually get the full season in.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's going to be run off in November and December, which of course traditionally would be downtime for yourself, having had such a long year of it as well.
Yeah, definitely. But I suppose in a way we've kind of had our kind of break period. I know we were still trying to, you know, keep ourselves ticking over. But like realistically, it probably only is. It's a six months of a probably, you know, hard slog. But it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's still only 6 months. And I think, like me personally, anyways, I'm just happy to be back. And I just want it to happen.
It's more of a level playing field, it seems, this year too in the county scene, because we know that like Dublin wouldn't have had a provincial championship game this year because obviously Westmeath got relegated last year, and you've had such a long gap from the end of the league into championship. But everyone is now starting from the same point on the blocks, aren't they? Which is great.
Yeah, no, it is, and I suppose there's a less period there to prepare as well. So I suppose it's definitely way open because, like, you know, what you have to work on and how long it takes you to get to where you need to be. Like, you generally have more time to work on it and to get to where you need to be. So, yeah, I suppose it's just, and then the fact that it's kind of like, it's like four games to win in All-Ireland, it's a different, it's very different for a lot of, especially like people from the Ulster province, like they play so many games to get them there. So yeah, like it's definitely different, but I suppose for us it's not majorly different. Like we wouldn't have had that many games to get there, but yeah, no, it definitely has put everyone at the same level, and I suppose as well just having the same time to get ready for it as well. So
now 2019 couldn't have gone any better for you on a personal level, and also from the team's point of view as well, in winning the three in a row. And the ultimate accolade was the Ladies Player of the Year, which you won in November as well out in City West. And you were joined that night by your club colleague Alwyn Carey in winning her first All-Star as well, which made it even more special.
Definitely, as I say, it was a special table to be around, because I was obviously just, I think we were, there's a few people there from Davidson's, and it was just, we were just so delighted to finally see Alwyn get her All-Star. So well deserved. And yeah, for me, it was like, I suppose it was a shot, but I don't know, it was a weird one to get it. Delighted to get it, very privileged to get it. But yeah, no, it was a mad night. But yeah, looking back on it, yeah, it's a great achievement, and I'm delighted.
Because you had your injury issues early on in the year as well, but you fought back tremendously to overcome them.
Yeah, I suppose the body's a bit older now, so getting through seasons is definitely a lot harder. You find when you get the injury, it just seems to be, you know, harder to pull back from. But like the setup we have, the structure we have, the support there between our S&C coach and our physio and doctor and stuff. Do you know what I mean? We're very lucky in the position we're in, and the management team will put that there. And like, you know, they, as much as it's up to me to push myself and get me back, the support that's there makes it so much more easier to do that.
And of course, the club scene is back. You've had a couple of league games which went well for you. You had a championship game last Wednesday, which unfortunately didn't go so well for you. Foxrock Cabin Teely, the defending champions, sending out an early statement of their intent. But you've been semi-finalists for the last couple of years in the championship, Siobhan. So you'll be looking to push on this year and at least try and get to a final if you can.
Yeah, last Wednesday is, I think we need to park that one and move on. It wasn't our finest performance, and obviously the team was terribly disappointed about how we displayed what we're about. But look, we'll pick ourselves up, we'll move on, we'll learn from it, and sure, look, what better team to learn from? They're an absolute class act, and they're playing with their style of football is amazing. They just came at us and just, you know, so we'll pick ourselves up and move on. But yeah, no, Dave says, like, we're trying to, every year we're trying to progress and we're trying to learn, and I think we are doing it, and hopefully this year we will be able to push on further than what we have in the last 2 years. But yeah, the senior championship within Dublin is it's very competitive, there isn't a whole lot between each team, so you know, it could go anyway, really. But yeah, like you said, Foxrock were definitely putting their marker down.
Well, you did beat the other team that got to the final last year, Kilmacud Crokes, in a league match there recently as well. So the club scene is going to keep you busy for the next few weeks. When do you collectively come together with the county squad again, Siobhan, to start preparations for the defence of the title?
Well, I suppose it will be, I think it's what, mid-September. I suppose it will depend on whether that guidance will stay the way it is, or it will be changed, or depending on how it all goes with COVID. But I suppose the aim is the end of mid-September, and I suppose that coincides when club championship finishes. And then, yeah, get this, what that brings you into 6 weeks of prep work to try and get us to where we want to be and how we want to be playing football. So, yeah, like it is, I suppose that's not a bad time frame, really, is it? You know, it's decent enough to get the prep work in.
Yeah, I suppose on the other side, though, I mean, socially the year is gone, but you're just so happy to have football back in your life as well. The challenge finally, Siobhan, no doubt, Cork will come back very strong this year. Mayo will be there. Galway will feel they have a major point to prove after last year's disappointment as well. Where else, perhaps, could you see challenges emerging from?
To be honest, I think Like I said earlier, it's actually very open this year because everyone's at the same level and everyone's coming in. Everyone's had the same kind of break period. Everyone's had the same prep time. You just don't know. Like I think Donegal's super team. Like any of them Northern teams, like Kerry, they're all, you know, they can all, you just don't know what's going to come up and what, how people are going to come out of this period that we're in. So to be honest, I don't think, like, our group is fairly, you know, Waterford as well. Like, I think any team can come. Like, even play Waterford, they're a very, very good footballing team as well. So, yeah, you just don't know. There's threats from everywhere, to be honest. And we just have to make sure that our performance is top-notch and that we're playing the football that we want to play. And because, yeah, there's threats coming from everywhere.
No better man than Mick Bowen to have you well primed and prepared for the heat. Well, it won't be heat, will it, in November? But we never know, of course, at this point, so you just don't know. That's the whole point, I suppose. But hopefully we have got football in November. That's the point I'm trying to make as well. Siobhan, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much indeed for taking time out of your bank holiday weekend to talk to us in the programme this morning. Wish you every success with the club and indeed the county as well over the next few months.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Siobhan McGrath there, absolute quality player and nice lady as well. Thank you very much indeed for joining us, Peter.
Yeah, really, really good. Interesting to hear from Siobhan. You know, one of the problem, you hope isn't a tragedy of COVID. It was the growth that the women's game was showing and the crowds and the interest that was developing and the media interest. Everything seemed to be going in the right direction. I've no suggestion that it won't. But you just hope that can continue on. Some people like Siobhan, there's great ambassadors there, you know, not just amongst the Dublin team, but right around the country in both codes.
Yeah.
And long may that continue, because you kind of feel, you'd hope, again, because they were getting matches on TV and, you know, it would seem to be a lot of momentum.
Yeah, and if you wanted anyone to go into battle with you, it would be McGrath. She's an outstanding character and a great, great, great heart and determination in her as well. They made great progress last year. They had the semi-finals in Croke Park back-to-back as well, which was a big thing, and drew, I think, over 10,000 people to the games as well, which was phenomenal for semi-finals because who usually maybe only have a couple of thousand, really. So that was great progress. The increased attendance level at the final last year as well, up from the year before. So, yeah, the 2020 campaign has been ongoing as well. So there's tremendous strides being made all around them. Please God they can continue it, and please God as well that the Sunday before Christmas we can be talking about four in a row for the girls. No pressure now, Mick or anybody else involved with the group there. We're going to take a commercial break. We're going to have more Gaelic games coming up after the break. We're going to have a look back at the action in the Dublin Senior Football and Hurling Club Championships over the last week. Stay with us.
Hello, and you're very welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport. Declan, it was a big statement of intent from Ballyboden in the football last week. Can you just give us an update on what happened?
Yeah, they played their first game, Peter, as defending county champions last Saturday evening at Parky Murucu. They took on Clontarf, who, of course, is the club of Jack McCaffrey. They won by 4-20-2-8, which is a convincing enough win in the overall scheme of things, but they certainly didn't have everything their own way in the game. They were 6 points down at one stage, 2-5-5, but, you know, they grew into the game well. Anthony Rainbow's men and Colly Baskell had another a fine evening, scoring one goal and 10 points. So just the start that Anthony Rainbow and the management crew of Bowden would have wanted.
On the hurling front, we had a second round of games. I know we're going to touch on that later on. But on the football front, how do you feel? Do you get a sense from around the club scene that there is a challenge now in terms of, or is there real enthusiasm now to get back and get underway?
There's burning enthusiasm there, you know, and you see the disappointment on people's faces when they can't get tickets to club games, you know, with the current restrictions of 200 people. So the appetite is definitely there. Just staying with the football championship, Vincent's had a fine victory last week themselves, and the evergreen Tomás Quinn continuing to pull the strings in the Marina men's outfit, scored a goal and 8 points in their victory last week over Whitehall Columbkills, the club, of course, of Cormac Costello, who, by the way, got the Columbkills goal. Kilmacud Crokes, their motor, and again, the champions in 2018. You talk about a statement of intent from Bowden. Crokes had a real statement of intent themselves last week, 6-13 to 1-10 over Aheny. Good win too for Castleknock, who beat Oliver Plunkett's Own Rua in the local derby, and Thomas Davis a win over Round Towers of Lusk. Davis, the beaten finalist last year, and another big win on the night too was for Ballymun Kickhams. They beat Skerries 3-18 to 12 points. Dean Rock, who we spoke about in the programme last week with his new business venture, leading the line there with Paddy Small. They scored 2 goals and 13 points between them. So I think it's fantastic because, as we said off air earlier on in a discussion, the club championship would have a couple of rounds in the month of April in both codes and would then break until the end of Dublin's All-Ireland season, which thankfully for the last number of years has been well into the month of September. But that would hold everything up, and then you'd have to come back late September into October, and a bit of a sprint then to finish your club championship. It is a sprint this year, but in the right type of weather and the right type of conditions overall.
Is there any kind of a sense of players breaking through? Any players from the club scene who've really put their hands up for selection, who may be coming out of the squad over the last year?
Yeah, but I haven't seen any football games, I must admit now, so far. I've seen a couple of hurling games all right in the B division, but I mean, the likes of Colly Basquiel there would be putting his hand up straight away. He's been around the last couple of years and probably deserves a chance. There's probably a lot of the under 20 Leinster Championship winning squad of last year doing well in the club as well, and of course they have an All-Ireland semi-final to look forward to in the next couple of months as well. But I'm sure that you know, that Desi Farrell and the rest of the selectors will be keeping themselves busy over the next few weeks, keeping an eye on the talent that they have and also emerging talent as well.
Let's hope that they get their slots out of these 200 spaces. They're quite coveted in each of the clubs, you know?
I'm sure they will, yes.
No, indeed. But it's exciting time. And then on the hurling front as well, it's the second round of games this week. So
they were played during the week, so all systems go there again. Coola, the defending champions, ran out comfortable enough victors over Setanta there. Nafina beat Thomas Davis as well in the same group. Ballyboden, they're back to winning ways after their defeat to Crokes, 4-29 to 6 points over Scully Cunnell. And after the disappointment of the performance and the result against Crokes, I'm sure Joe Fortune will be very, very pleased with that one. Kilmacud Crokes indeed as well, back-to-back wins to move into the quarterfinals. They beat Craigh Kieran. Luke and Sarah's won, Vincent's won, St Bridget's last year's beaten finalists all won as well. And Whitehall Columbkills indeed had an impressive victory over Fogs. So yeah, it's motoring along nicely in that group as well as the quarterfinals shape up, Peter.
Good stuff. So I know we're going to be joined very shortly by Alan Cawley, and Alan's going to be filling us in on all the latest football and hopefully getting his FA Cup final memories. Alan, are you with us?
Hello, Peter.
How are you doing? Well done last night. Great to see you back in action at Oriel Park. How did you enjoy the game?
It was great to be back, Peter. Yeah, I've been listening to the show and obviously speaking there about the Gaelic and the championship being back for the club players. It was great for our league to be back last night and everything went off without a hitch. Obviously, there was the game in the Brandywell prior to our game and all went well up there, and it was a good result for Sligo Rovers, a brilliant result for Sligo Rovers actually. And then obviously our game, and it was very good considering it was the first game back, Peter. I felt the intensity and the tempo of the match, particularly the first half, was very, very good and the quality was very good. It kind of tailed off a little bit towards the end, particularly, I suppose, players just ran out of that bit of energy in the second half. But overall, I think it was a very, very good return. And St. Pat were absolutely brilliant on the night. I was so impressed with them. They turned in a brilliant performance. Stephen O'Donnell obviously did a lot of work in the lockdown period in preparation for this match because tactically he got it spot on. He nullified all the threats to Dundalk. And Dundalk were very, very slow and kind of pedestrian at times, which is something you wouldn't associate with Dundalk. And we've spoken already last week about this sprint finish type season that we have with only 13 games. And already you would have to look at that and think that was 2 points dropped in the game last night, Peter.
When you look at St. Pat's, how did you feel? Could you see contenders there? Did you feel that it was a sense of, you know what, it was just, you know, getting a game under the belt, people are going to start off slowly, not everyone's going to be hitting their straps first up after such a long break? Or did you see enough there? Because it was pretty impressive, and Benson was to the fore as well.
Oh, they were terrific, yeah. They're not contenders for the league by any means, but I wouldn't expect them to be, Peter, because to be fair to Stephen O'Donnell, I think there was nine players, a turnover and nine new players come in. There was another couple come in actually during the lockdown period, and one of those was Jordan Gibson, who played up front last night, played really well. The wing-back, Titoff, done very well. He was new also. But starting the game last night was six of those new signings. So Stephen is trying to bed in a lot of new players, and I felt that's why maybe the lockdown period might have helped him more than other clubs, because it gave him even more time than what he had prior to the initial start of the season. And he certainly worked heavily on them, because you look at them last night, they were so well organised. As I say, he played with three at the back and two wing backs, but particularly in that central area, he played with like a block of four. He had two sitting and he had two advanced, Dan Ward and Robbie Benson, and they were the ones who were triggering the press all night, particularly, as I say, when their energy was up in that first half. And Dan Ward played really well, and as you rightly say, Robbie Benson, he got man of the match with us, and he was brilliant on the night. And I think that's key for Dundalk, for St. Pat's going forward, Peter, because Stephen O'Donnell, I mentioned it after the match last night, for far too long St. Pat's have been a bit weak mentally, in my opinion. There's almost a bit of a sense of Arsenal about them, that there's a soft underbelly in the last few years. But certainly last night, and I think particularly with Stephen O'Donnell in charge now, because of what he brings in terms of his experience and the mentality that he has and the success that he had at Dundalk, and he's obviously brought Robbie Benson with him, I think that's the standard set for St. Pat's now, and that's the level that they have to reach every week, and I think that's what Stephen will demand from them. And certainly going forward, I'd be optimistic about them. I know it's only one game in, you won't get too carried away, but there was so much I saw last night to build on going forward, and obviously they have the addition of Georgie Kelly as well, a massive signing for them also during the lockdown period there during the week. And he'll be a huge addition, along with young Gibson up front. So I was so impressed with St. Pat's. I thought they were terrific on the night.
There's two interesting games today now. Shelburne against John Sheridan's Waterford. What did you make of John's appointment, firstly, and what do you think he'll bring to Waterford?
Yeah, very surprising, Peter, because I think all the speculation around Waterford throughout the lockdown period, especially when Alan Reynolds left, was all the talk was that that Lee Power, the owner, might pull the plug on the whole thing down there, which would have been a disaster in my view, because we need as much country teams as possible, and particularly one with the tradition and the heritage that Waterford United have. So I was delighted, first of all, that they appointed a manager, and then someone with the stature of John Sheridan. As we all know, you're speaking about FA Cup memories there, and certainly Republic of Ireland fans will remember John Sheridan over the years. He was a brilliant player. So it'll be interesting to see what he brings. He obviously comes with a wealth of experience. He doesn't know the league that well. But he will obviously bring huge experience. And you'd expect them now to have an okay start to the season. They've won two, lost two. So they're sitting there mid-table. What I found last night with the games, Peter, there's a lot of uncertainty until you see the teams at least once or twice. You look at the result in the Brandywell, that was a huge surprising result. Even last night, people would have fancied Dundalk to beat Pat. So there was two, not you could call them mini upsets, I suppose, last night. So it'll be interesting to see, I suppose, till we get a week under our belt of just seeing the teams. Just how they will fare. But I think it's a good appointment for Waterford, obviously, because John Sheridan and the career that he's had, but also the fact that Waterford have a manager, and hopefully Lee Powers is around to stay.
Al, good morning to you, Declan here. Of course, they've added Curtis Byrne to their ranks as well, Waterford as well, I see, which is an interesting signing for them. But let's have a look at today. We've got two games. We've Shelburne taking on Waterford, as we said, at Tolka Park. But the second one then is Shamrock Rovers at home to Finn Harps at 5:30 this evening. Tremendous opportunity for the Hoops there to kick on, considering Dundalk's result last night.
Absolutely, Declan. Yeah, and that's what we've been mentioning prior to kick-off. And obviously with the game last night, Dundalk slipping up. And it was a slip-up because, as I say, because of the truncated season that we have now in only 13 games, and they're playing catch-up, they have to win every game. And obviously, they didn't win last night, so it's a huge advantage for Shamrock Rovers already. Only one game in at home to Finn Harps. Finn Harps have had a decent start to the season. Ollie Horgan has recruited very, very well. I watched them in Derry before the lockdown, and they played really well. They probably should have picked up the 3 points. They've also added Stephen Folan to the ranks. So by no means it'll be an easy game for Shamrock Rovers, but at home, you would fully expect them to get the victory, Declan. And to have that added, as you say, that they can go 5 points clear. And 5 points with only maybe 12 games to go is a big, big lead already. That's a huge incentive for them, and I would fully expect them to pick up the 3 points.
And of course, St. Pat's will be back in action on Monday night when they face Derry City at Richmond Park. So an early opportunity for Declan Devine and co. to try and get back to winning ways.
Yeah, and I'd say Declan was bitterly disappointed. I heard his interview after the match, and they've already lost 3 games out of 5, considering they qualified for Europe last year, Declan, in 4th place, and Declan did a brilliant job. To lose 3 out of your first 5 is a poor start by Derry City standards, and they'll be very disappointed to lose at home to Sligo, who were the bottom team last night. Declan, I heard his interview, as I say, he was really, really disappointed. So they're a wounded animal coming to Inchicore, but the confidence that St. Pat's would have gained from that result last night will be absolutely huge. And as I say, the challenge for St. Pat's now is to set the standard for themselves last night, and that was a really high standard against Dundalk. They have to reach that standard every week now, and that's what Stephen O'Donnell will demand from them. So they'll gain huge confidence from the result, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them beat Derry at home Monday night at all.
And Bohemians are back in action tomorrow as well. They travel to Turner's Cross to take on Cork City, who'll be anxious to match the result, at least, that Sligo got last night.
Yeah, it's strange, really, when we're talking about Cork City down the bottom and trying to match the result of the other team that's at the bottom with them, considering how successful they've been over the last 2 years. But as I say, the wheels have certainly come off down there, and it's a challenging time for Neil Fenn, a new manager down there, and he's fully aware of that challenge and the poor start that they've had. It'd be something similar what I felt with St. Pat. Neil Fenn will have had a lot of time now in the lockdown maybe to review the start that they've had and to work hard on the squad of players. So I would expect that they'll be a little bit different now after the lockdown, but I still think Bohemians will fancy their chances going down there. They're sitting in 3rd place. They'll want to keep the on the coattails of the top two and keeping those European positions. So I would fancy Bohemians. But they're hard to call, Declan. The 2 games I covered last night, I got them both wrong in terms of prediction. So they're very, very hard to call because it's the first game back. But if you were to kind of ask me to really go for a prediction, I would say Bohemians to beat Cork.
It's just great to have it back, isn't it, after whatever number of months it was?
Oh, absolutely, Declan. It's brilliant to have it back because we've seen all the other leagues have their restarts and we're kind of sitting by idly. And there was a lot of negotiation, a lot of discussion, a lot of debate, a lot of arguments, a lot of meetings. In the period, obviously, trying to get clubs happy and financial packages in place. And then you're talking about the formation of the league in terms of relegation, promotion. And it's very, very hard, as you know, Declan, to keep all the clubs happy because they all have different interests. But the fact that we got here and we got it back last night without a hitch, hopefully we can run the season off now, because I felt it was really, really important that we did have some sort of a season. And now we will have, and we will have winners, and we will have a team that get relegated. And we'll be able to look back hopefully by the end of the season and say 2020, even though it was a disaster at the start of it, we've had a season and we'll have champions.
I know, Alan, you were working with our good friend Stuart Byrne last night for the television. He was quite critical in a newspaper article yesterday about the attitude of clubs, certain clubs anyway, upon the restart. What did you make of his comments?
Yeah, it was very strong from Stuart, but it was honest and it was how he felt. I spoke to him last night about it as well, Declan, and he feels strongly about that kind of stuff because I think that column was based largely on a broader picture in terms of where is the league going. And I suppose when you hit a global pandemic, all the kind of stuff that has gone on over the years and how much the league is neglected, that was highlighted massively. And when you see clubs struggling as badly as they are, and they struggle on a day-to-day basis anyway, but then they're hit with a pandemic and it's a disaster really for a lot of them. And I suppose in defence of a couple of the clubs, they're trying to just, I suppose, keep themselves afloat as such and make sure that there's a club by the end of the pandemic, which I suppose Sligo Rovers and St. Pat's, that's what they'll tell you they were trying to do. But I think Stuart was coming at it from a point of view that we need to be serious about where we're going here. And I mentioned about the formation of the league in terms of part-time teams, full-time teams, amateur teams. I think we need to get our house in order in terms of what we are as a league and where we are going forward. And hopefully with the new setup, with the new regime in the FBI, we can kind of start thinking about that more strongly. And I think that's what was highlighted, Declan, more so than anything in the pandemic, is just how far we are behind in terms of all the other leagues around Europe with their professionalism and where they are and where they stand with full-time football. And as an industry, basically, we don't have that industry, and that's something that we should have in place in the year 2020.
Couldn't agree with you more. FA Cup final day today, Al, in one word, Arsenal or Chelsea?
Chelsea.
Oh, sounds emphatic. I couldn't agree with you more, my friend, and how dapper you looked on the box last night as well. As per usual, it must be said.
Yeah, well, I've been dressed well, Declan.
You might teach Stewie a thing or two there beside
you. There you go, yeah. He should write a column next week about how he dresses.
The fashionistas of the SSE are Trusty League. Thank you very much indeed for taking our call on this bank holiday Saturday. Enjoy the rest of the long weekend and all the football that's to come.
Pleasure, lad.
Fair play to you. Thanks indeed there to Alan Cawley. Just something I neglected to mention during the GAA section. Crumlin GAA Club is 50 years old this year. They're having a special weekend of a 50-hour non-stop football, hurling and camogie marathon. It started yesterday afternoon. It's still ongoing down in O'Toole Park. And tomorrow they have the Jim Boggan Skills Competition for under 15 hurlers. It starts at 12 o'clock there tomorrow. And Adam Kelly of Castleknock was the winner last year. So the finest underage hurling talent in the city making their way to Crumlin for that very special event in memory of a very special man in the late, great Jim Boggan as well. Well, we're almost at the end of Dublin's Talking Sport for this afternoon, or this morning I should say. I hope that Blaine O'Hara, our producer for the day, is a happy man later on this afternoon. We'll have to wait and see. We hope that Ireland win the cricket for Peter as well. The Hampshire they're playing in this afternoon,
the Aegeus Bowl in Hampshire, so it's on Sky Sports at 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock this afternoon. Okay, super stuff. Well, that's about all we have time for on the programme today. I just want to extend a very special thank you indeed to all our contributors, and to Peter indeed for joining us in studio, and Blaine as well this morning. Ken and Reggie should be back with you next Saturday morning at the same time of just after 9 o'clock. Paul Morris and Blaine O'Hara were the producers of the programme, and we'll all be back next Saturday morning, please God, at the same time of 9 o'clock. So all we can say to you is stay safe and stay careful over the course of the week as well. And if you want to get in touch with the programme at any stage during the week, you can text 087 11 55 77. Coming up after the news with Sarah Jane Tobin at 11 o'clock is Saturday Live. So from all of us on the sports team here at Sunshine 106.8, until next Saturday morning, take care, folks.